Hello and welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig, and today I'm here with Gabriella Black, or as she likes to go by, Gabby. Hi, Gabby.
Hi.
So this is going to be a cool opportunity for us. We're actually going to talk about psychodynamic therapy. And for those of you that may not really know what psychodynamic therapy is, it is one of the oldest forms of therapy. And the hallmark people that anybody would know about it is actually Freud, right? That's right. And psychodynamic therapy has come a long way since then. But in the field, one of the things that it's known as is one of the approaches that looks into what we call depth psychology, or kind of a depth counseling, where you're looking really, really deep into a person and things are going on. But that's kind of what I think of whenever I think of psychodynamic therapy. Can you talk with me a little bit about even what you think of, Gabby, with all the training and instruction that you've had around it?
Sure. Yeah, it began with psychoanalysis and with Freud and Jung, and they split apart. Psychoanalytic is where someone lays on the couch. Mm-hmm. You generally see this in cartoons or TV shows.
Or comic strips.
Comic strips. People still do this. It's still a valid form of work with the mind. Psychodynamic psychotherapy is kind of a step between that and talk therapy. We sit with me and my client, we face each other, but we do something similar to analysis, where we listen to the subconscious content that's being brought in. And when I say that to people, they usually look at me really weird. Yeah. And say, how can you listen to the subconscious, Gabby? Subconscious.
Well, let's actually even talk about first, if I'm a therapist that's listening to this, or even I'm just like a average person that's listening to this, why would that be important for my therapist to maybe listen to some of the subconscious context that's going on?
Well, because I can tell you a lot of things with my mouth, and it doesn't necessarily make them true. And I can tell you a lot of things at a different level with my body, and that doesn't make it true either. The most true form to that person of communication is when you can look at all of the different ways they're communicating with you. And that includes subconscious content.
Right. I think that even just to kind of go off what you say there, whenever we're talking about subconscious, it's something that's constantly going on, constantly in the background, and can come to the foreground. And whenever I think of the subconscious, one of the things I think of is, or I remember from my schooling and everything, is that the subconscious actually makes up a much larger part of your consciousness in general than your actually conscious awareness of things that are going on. So yes. It's almost like maybe whenever we just focus on what's happening in our conscious mind, our conscious awareness, we're actually only getting a very small piece of the overall picture.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's plenty of instances where things happen. People cry at songs and they don't know why they're crying at the song. They just break down crying and it makes no sense. James Brown didn't do anything to them. If you look at the subconscious content, there's something there that's nagging at them in their mind, something that needs to be resolved.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying you're trying to look at a lot of different pieces while you're sitting there and talking to somebody. Like for you personally, what are some of the, maybe even the most telling pieces that you may see? Like, is it more of like what the body is telling you whenever someone's speaking about something? Or is it more of like the unsaid things that happen in the room? Or what are some of the things that your kind of particular skill set has told you really to hone in on?
So what I personally listen for are patterns. Patterns in their speech, words that they use to describe certain things. A lot of times when there's a connection in someone's mind, the descriptive words will be used similarly.
Right. So like if they may use a word like overwhelmed or something like that again and again, or scared, or they may, or perplexed, or whatever word it may be, words that they use over and over, what about like gestures or movements that happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It could be a combination of several things. For instance, if someone is saying that they feel trapped, and then they mention that there's something else happening in their life. There was a mouse trap, and then there was something else that was something else having to do with traps.
Saw someone get trapped in a car in a movie, or
right, and then they then bridge from that into their mom, and they start talking about their mom. Then maybe there's some connection between traps and their mom, and I'll ask them, you know, how did you go from traps to your mom? What was that connection there?
So you become really curious about how they might go from topic to topic, or what is that transition from topic to topic?
Right. Or yeah, it can manifest in all sorts of ways. If someone is even in their body language looking at an object in my office repeatedly, I'll ask them about it, and I'll see what the object means to them.
Right, right. So I kind of wonder for you, whenever you see some of this, like the kind of signs of the unconsciousness coming into the room, and you're able to bring it up in session, what do you notice starts to happen?
So usually there are a few things that'll happen. Either the person will laugh, and they'll get kind of shy about it, or surprised. Sometimes they'll defend against it, and they'll say that's when their mind is just not ready to quite make that connection. They'll go like, oh no, that's not it.
I was just looking at that because that's where my eyes go or something.
Right. It has absolutely no meaning to me when I can see the pattern, and I can see that there is, it's significant for them. And then sometimes they cry. And when they cry, I know that I've gotten to something that's very important, a connection for them that's really quite deep. Right. And we sit with it, and we think about what that connection is.
Right. Whenever I'm thinking about what you're saying from a like a brain-based level, whenever we talk and whenever we communicate, we are doing so from a prefrontal cortex, where the smartest, most complex part of our brain. And the things that happen and more of the what we might even call the more important parts when we're talking about like the emotional pieces, or even the unconscious pieces, where it might be more in the midbrain. And we know that in the midbrain, where the eyes go and the movements, that has a lot to do with it. And it sounds like whenever you help people make these connections, you're inviting them to go deeper actually into their brain. And you're inviting them to go into deeper places that they might not always be ready to go to. And they let you know that, it sounds like. But the beautiful thing about a pattern is you just wait for it to come up again.
That's right. Sorry, that was my clock. Yeah, if people aren't ready, they let me know by pulling back a little bit usually and becoming a little bit hesitant. And then I'm aware that that topic is sensitive.
Right.
But it comes back around. Usually they initiate their own understanding next time around. And it's suddenly something that makes perfect sense to them.
Right. I wonder, I'm talking about this psychodynamic therapy being more of a depth type of therapy. And I think that that's important for people to kind of even know the difference between a depth therapy and kind of what maybe more of a, gosh, I want to be careful how I say this because I don't want to throw any types of therapy under the bus. That isn't my intention whenever I say this. But more of like a solution-focused therapy, right? Where solution-focused is like, hey, I'm just having some anxiety and I just need some tools to get over to get through it. Or I just need to figure out, just like one or two sessions or something like that. How can I get better at managing my finances or something like that, where it's a very short-term thing. It's very driven and the person really might not be interested in spending a lot of time actually trying to get to the root of whatever issue is. They want to find maybe a quick fix or something like that. So I want to kind of find out, whenever we talk about these depth type of therapies, and you mentioned like going into and understanding the unconscious context around things, whenever someone is in a type of depth therapy, what kind of changes can they expect to see, or what can they expect to notice that might be really different about the sessions?
Well, I don't give homework. I'm not directive. I won't ask people a lot about their behaviors. We don't do A, B, C, what happens. But what I do is I think with them about their thoughts. This is it's a very meta process. So I, for instance, if someone were to come into let's say regular therapist and say that they had a panic attack, there might be a very brief solution. There might be let's talk about deep breathing. Let's talk about some solutions that you could have for your panic. Whereas what I would say is, well, where were you? What did you see in the moments right before you noticed you were having a panic attack? What was the last thought through your mind? And what did that remind you of? What did that bring up for you?
Right. Always searching for that pattern, right? Well, what happened? What was the triggering event? And whenever they let you know that triggering event, well, what happens then?
And then I try to find, that's like a tick mark on a pattern. And I say, well, okay. So what it felt like was drowning. Okay. Well, that's an interesting word. Have you experienced drowning before? Is there anyone, have you seen drowning before? Oh, well, once you went to the river and you thought you might drown. Well, tell me about that. Oh, well, it turns out that you really miss your dad. Oh, you were disowned. Oh my goodness. Well, you're really struggling with that right now because it's your dad's birthday and you're having an anniversary reaction. I see. All of these things, they can all kind of go together in your stream of consciousness and become quite overwhelming.
Right. I'm kind of curious. I want to tell you something that I share with clients sometimes, and I want to kind of get your opinion on it, from your perspective. I tell them whenever I'm explaining emotions sometimes that I want you to imagine a hole. And let's say in that hole is fear. And whenever you have scary events that happen, sometimes they get thrown in that fear hole. And sometimes they're divided, right? It's kind of scary and it's kind of sad. It's kind of scary and it's kind of exciting. And whenever you have an experience that's similar to an experience you've already had, and let's say it's exciting, it can hit that exciting spot and still feel a little scary at the same time, even if it doesn't have anything to do with that. But just because, like, that's how the emotions work. They're very much connected to each other, right? Whereas I'm using my hands to gesture this. So those of you guys that can't see because of the audio format of the podcast, whenever we are looking at this hole, the sadness, there can be all kinds of things that are connected from it. And we may just be talking about, like, my pizza didn't get delivered here on time. And then we wonder, like, why is this overwhelming sadness, this hopelessness that things won't go right? Why does that show up over a pizza not getting here on time? You're like, well, because there's more things that are in that hole than just the pizza. And whenever that initial sadness, even though it may be a pebble, gets thrown into that hole, you become subconsciously aware of all of the other things that have gone into deepening that hole and widening it and adding to it. So I kind of want, that's usually how I explain it whenever I talk to people. I wonder, what would that feel like kind of even from your kind of approach or theoretical orientation?
Absolutely accurate. Yes. It's, I would say that emotions can be linked and that they can be accidentally activated, and that a lot of times I believe that people can be going through life and not know their own motivations.
Right.
Yeah. How do, for instance, people get stuck? Okay, I'm a ex-smoker, and I often wonder, you know, why was I smoking? What was the thing that was making me smoke? And I was thinking about it during my last cigarette. And I realized that I was so angry. I was envisioning a fire in my stomach. And I was imagining that bringing the smoke into my body was making the fire smaller. For some reason, those ideas had gotten linked in my head, and I smoked when I was mad. And I know that's a silly idea, but, and kind of childish, but those ideas, they just, that's the way our brains work.
Right. So you say that it's silly, but people that may be listening to this, right, that actually doesn't sound silly at all. We do things, and it may not make much sense as to why we're doing them until we actually sit and we think about it. And it sounds like you're saying, look at the patterns. And I kind of wonder for you, just here in your opinion, how hard is that for us to do on our own?
It's actually quite hard. And I like to liken it to trying to put a puzzle together when you have the pieces right up against your face.
Right.
It's really hard to see where they go, and really hard to put them together, hard to see the whole picture if you're too close. You need to step back a little bit. And therapy offers that perspective. You get to step back a little bit.
Right.
Psychodynamic psychotherapy, it gives practice in looking at one's own mind. And the longer you're in it, and it can take a while, but the longer you're in it, it gives you the skill to check out your own mind.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that skill, actually, because you said it could take a while. Yeah. I even want to talk about that, because it sounds like one of the skills that psychodynamic therapy helps people develop is to recognize these connections. And in recognizing these connections, it helps them to better understand and manage what's going on.
Yes.
Like you said, going back to the cigarette, I wonder whenever you discovered that connection, that link, did that make it easier for you to adjust that behavior or to stop doing that?
Yes. I realized that what I was trying to do was stop anger. And when I realized that, I gave myself permission to be angry and to express my anger more appropriately.
Right. And I think that's so important whenever we talk about depth psychology. It is starting to unravel the why we do things and to kind of give you the insider ability to stop what it is you're doing at a very different level than other types of therapy. I think of different types of other depth therapies that I would call, and where it's very like somatic type things where it's very much feeling based and body centric. And those types of therapies can do similar things, but it sounds like this is a constant process where you're training somebody to learn to eventually do this themselves.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, the hope is that someone will come to therapy and they will be in a place where they don't know what's happening. They wake up in the morning and feel awful, and their life by all accounts is a happy life. They should be fine, but they feel bad, or they're having temper tantrums or something, and they come to therapy, and then over time they just don't need us anymore. They start telling us the news or the weather, and they're able to manage their life. And at that point, that's what we call the terminal phase. And that's when we talk to them about checking in less frequently or not at all.
Right. Right. I wonder for you, even personally, being a therapist that kind of goes through this process of sitting through, you know, people making these connections and everything like that. Whenever someone makes a connection, and it's maybe a pretty substantial connection, what is it like in the room whenever someone kind of puts two and two together?
Oh, well, it can be quite powerful. I always feel so privileged and humbled to be in a space where someone lets me be a part of their mind, lets me help them see themselves, you know, just for a second. I've sat with people who have wept. Sometimes people laugh, you know. It depends on people and how they deal, but it's always something very big and very special.
Right. You know, I'm kind of wondering if somebody's listening to this and maybe they're the type of person that's never going to go to therapy. They just will never go. I wonder that even if that person is listening to this, what's something that is maybe important for them to understand about what it is that we're talking about building this skill up of recognizing this pattern? What's something that even that person that may never seek help in this area, what's something that they could start doing to try to start to work on this skill, even if it will take a lot longer?
So when they notice themselves doing stuff that feels irrational, I guess, out of control, something they don't understand, or maybe they feel overwhelmed, think about what they're thinking. They could journal. Journaling is a great tool. They could just simply meditate. They could sit with their thoughts and pay attention to their mind. They might want to try dream journaling. Dreams are fascinating things. They tell us a ton about our mind.
Right. I actually do want to talk to you about that for a little bit, but before we talk about dreams, it sounds like that psychodynamic therapy does a lot with tracing thoughts and where do they come from, what do? What do they mean? And exploring a lot about thoughts. And I wonder what's the process that you kind of go through as far as like training people to kind of be more aware of the thoughts, especially people that are anxious that may feel like there's a bajillion thoughts going on in their mind.
So the first thing we do is we, well, at least I look at their behaviors and the thoughts that are most prevalent. If they're an anxious person, their anxiety will sort of crystallize around one thought, like, I'm gonna die, or something is out of control, or there's sickness. And so after I talk to them for a while, I'll find that one thought that's the anxiety thought. And then I'll start working back. Where did that come from? Where's the origin of that thought? And then how can we make it conscious? How can we take that origin and give it space to be known by the person and give it space to be held by them in their conscious mind, because that takes its power away.
Right, so being able to trace it back to an event, a time, a place, being able to kind of give it the story that it keeps telling you.
Exactly. Give it its story. I like the way you said that. It doesn't always get traced back to one specific event. Sometimes people that have anxiety, they've experienced this several times in their life. It's been reinforced so many times. The anxiety idea, like, I'm going to fail. And then they can point to 200 times they've failed. And they say,
Right.
see, I failed. And there's no one major cataclysmic moment. And so what I do then is I go back to the failures and I try to just like shed a little bit of light on them, bring a little bit of love and compassion back to the person who was there failing. It's okay that you failed. We all fail. Do you want to talk about it and make it give a little bit of space to the person?
And a little opportunity to find more, right? To continue
Yeah.
looking for some of those patterns.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, actually, before we jump into the dreams, I like talking about dreams. I haven't ever had the chance to talk about it on the podcast yet.
Okay.
So, is there anything else that you feel like someone that's listening to this that would maybe be important for them to know about psychodynamic therapy?
That is so difficult. Psychodynamic psychotherapy is a huge topic. Yes, I would like to say that it is so multifaceted. It has been brought contemporary. It's not just the works of Freud. There are people alive now who are writing books and having theories, and it keeps evolving and growing. It's something that's alive and changing. And there are lots of different veins of psychodynamic psychotherapy. And so if you get a psychodynamic psychotherapist, let's say you really want one, and you go out and you find one and you don't like them, just try again. There's 100 flavors.
So let's start talking a little bit about dreams.
All right.
Right. Now, out of all the therapies, psychoanalytic, psychodynamic, they're big into dreams because that is our window to our unconscious. So one of the things that I want to ask is, maybe how often might you ask clients about dreams?
So I have a standing invitation about their dreams. And I tell them that if they ever have dreams that are confusing or interesting, that they can always bring them to me. I'll ask a client if they've had disrupted dreams or dreams that are particularly upsetting to them, if they're in a time of high anxiety or depression, if their mood has been disrupted or their life has been disrupted.
Right. I find it curious that so few therapies talk about dreams. And
me too.
I kind of wonder for you, what's your thoughts on that? Why so many therapies might shy away from that?
Well, I think that for a lot of therapies, it's not considered real because it's not a rational piece of our brain that's awake and working the way we know it to be. We know our brain to work in our awake space.
Right.
But the dream space is fascinating because it's the place where it works in symbols like play and art. And I love working and interpreting that space.
Right.
Because it's in a way so much more real. So the brain can just kind of show you what's happening or what it's worried about or thinking about. And some of it is, you know, people say, well, that's just what you saw on the TV. It's just news. It's just stuff you saw during the day.
Yeah.
And maybe that's true, but the way you put it together in your dreamscape makes it something different. That makes it unique to you.
Right. Well, I think there's something else interesting too. When we look at the science between dreams and our REM sleep, we dream when we're in the rapid eye movement stage of sleep. And the interesting thing about it is, so we know a lot about sleep, but there's a lot more to learn about sleep. But one of the things we do know is that whenever you go into your REM sleep, that's when your brain's actually the most active. And a lot of theories that are continuing to get support is that whenever your brain is making the most type of connections, when it's reinforcing connections. And one of the interesting things about psychodynamic therapy, as you were talking about earlier, it is a therapy to explore the connections that we make between like our thoughts and the things that happen to us, why we go from thoughts to thoughts or why this feeling shows up, and to connect and look for patterns that happen throughout our life that seem to dictate what we're doing or what we're feeling at any given time. So it actually makes really good sense to me that this would be an area that you guys might dabble in. And you said that one of the things that you guys do is dream interpretation. So to talk with me a little bit about that.
So dream interpretation is when people bring us their dreams, and maybe they write it down or they'll just recite it to us. And then we can look at the symbols and the way it played out for them. Not only what they saw, but what they felt, what they were thinking in the dream. If they saw themselves, what they looked like in the dream. It's a way for us to see what their mind, the connections their mind is making, and the way that they're digesting the content in their lives.
I imagine that reoccurring dreams are probably pretty important.
Reoccurring dreams are very important because it means that something is not digesting.
Yeah. See, I'm really interested in dreams for a completely different reason, though. I'm a big lucid dreamer. It's something I learned to do a long time ago. It's something that I still actively try to practice and do. And I wonder, I do have a reoccurring dream that happens every now and again. It hasn't, well, actually, I guess it hasn't happened for a while, but it is a dream where I am going upstairs and all of a sudden I can't move and my feet are like 1,000 pounds and they're going up. And so for you, if I was a client coming to see you, that would be very relevant information. And
Yes, it would.
you might take that and try to figure out this feeling, this thought that means that there's something that's unresolved, or there's something that your brain is telling you in this dream that you're trying to either climb towards, or you're not getting from, or anything like that. Is that right?
Right. It would be for me personally, I would need more information, but let's assume that in this dream, you're in a house and you're climbing up the stairs and you're trying to get to the roof of the house and you're feeling stuck. I would want to know when the dream started, if this is a dream, how often it recurs, what age it began, if there was a trauma related to it, or if this is something about your experience of yourself. Because this could be about your relationship to your own mind, and going up the stairs could be you're trying to access your own thoughts and you're feeling resistant to accessing your thoughts. You're worried about it for some reason. Maybe there's something there you don't want to look at.
Like it's a everything in the dream is potentially symbolic in some way
Yes.
to what's happening in your life or something that's already happened that's being triggered now.
Yes. And it can be something that happened outside of you or your experience of yourself and your own mind. It can be lots of things.
How do you learn to do the dream interpretation?
So we had several classes on dream interpretation, and I personally have done lots of academic work on in classes, sitting in classes, learning about hearing dreams, hearing analysts analyze dreams, and doing my own dream interpretation, interpreting my own dreams, and keeping a dream journal.
Right. Well, the wonderful thing about this is people might be sitting here listening, and it's like you could be making connections that aren't true.
Sure.
And I think that if I was someone that was sitting here wondering or thinking you could be making connections that aren't true, I could see how someone might say that. But I think that's something important too, is while you've been talking about this, if someone says that doesn't feel right, or even earlier, like you said, is someone's just not really quite ready for the connection, or doesn't like quite feel right, you don't really push on it or anything. It's
No.
like, oh, okay, maybe that's
That's
wrong.
right. That's right. Because I don't know your mind. I don't have it. It is your mind. All I can do is I can give you my best guess and hope that that helps.
And it'll feel right to you if it is, and if you're in the place to make that connection.
Right.
I think that's important because some people that may be listening to this may feel like that they're so lost or so confused in their life that they don't have the ability or the capability to make those connections, and they might not. But sometimes hearing those connections reflected back at you, it feels different, and it gives you the opportunity to allow those connections to either make place or to let them churn a little longer. Right? Our unconscious, anything that it hears, anything that it senses, anything that it picks up, it just goes through and churns on it. It thinks about it, it crunches it, it fits it into places where it fits, or it spits it out.
Absolutely. I like to think of it from a mother-child dynamic because I'm a mother and I have children. And I've also been a child with a mom. And so think back to your childhood and Like if you were hungry, your mom might say, "Oh, you're hungry," and get you some food. And you would think, "Oh, well, yeah, I was. That's hunger. I'm hungry." And I'd feel better. Or your mom would say, "Oh, you're tired." And you would just throw a fit and be like, "No, that's wrong. She's wrong." And that's exactly the way this is. I'm giving you information about yourself that may or may not be true, but when it's correct, it feels right.
Right. No, that makes good sense. I wonder, I know that we talked about a lot here, Gabby, and I wonder if there's anything we haven't talked about that you feel like someone that's listening to this, it might be really important to know about the approach that you use or about dream interpretation or even just about like how all this fits into like the counseling or therapy world. Or do you feel like we kind of gave a good cover of it?
He gave a pretty good cover. I mean, all I could say more is that I like to think of myself as like an emotional doula. There's doulas for birth, doulas for death, and I like to think of myself as someone who sits with and just kind of helps the process.
Right.
Yeah. And it always feels better, I think, to have someone when you're scared or sad or feeling lonely. It's good sometimes just to have someone sit with you and witness you in your sadness or whatever it is you're feeling. And that's what I do.
Sounds very poetic. I wonder for you, Gabby, let's say that someone's listening to this and they have a question they might want to ask you or that they want to get in contact with you. How might they go about doing that?
Oh, you can email me. My email is gblacktherapy@gmail.com. They could go to my website, www.gabriellablack.com.
That's perfect. And that is GABRIE. LLA Black, BLACK.
That's correct.
Easy peasy. Well, thank you so much, Gabby, for being on with me today and talking with me about this. We may end up talking a little more about dreams. I like those kind of topics, and I definitely know that it would be a cool thing to even just kind of delve into a little bit further. So I'm glad that you brought that up today.
Well, thank you very much, Craig. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. And thank you all for listening to this episode. Until next time, I wish you well. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information. And those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. Music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.